Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 216. Well, in the news this week, my cold got worse, but it is slowly leaving. Just wanted to apologize for not making the Masonic Roundtable. Had a little bit of a family emergency, and everything is just fine, so thanks for all the concern. I appreciate all the well wishes. In other news, I am fast approaching the end of my year in the East as Worshipful Master of Waukegan Lodge number 78 in good old Waukegan, Illinois, and that should be pretty interesting. I went ahead and I got my past master's jewel. Now, some lodges do past master's jewels, and they buy the $1,000 jewels, you know, because these things are supposed to be gold or solid silver or whatever. Some lodges just do a simple badge that says past master, and it adds the little metal rings to a badge that you already have. My lodge has typically recycled past master's jewels when they have them, and those jewels are appraised anywhere between $1,000 to $6,000. I mean, they're expensive. I went with the master's craft for my jewels, and that was because the price was right and they produce a phenomenal product. $30 is what their jewel cost, and it's a really nice jewel. It is gold fired. It's very nice. It's called the Wilmhurst is the one that I bought. I also bought an antique version just to keep, and I think it is a great option for those brothers who want a little bit of a classy jewel without having to break the bank and make your lodge pay $1,000, $2,000, whatever, for a solid gold jewel. So again, great options. Check out the Master's Craft. They're on Facebook, and again, some really good stuff. I think you will enjoy it. He's got all kinds of jewels for different appendant bodies and different orders and things, so check those out. In other news, we had a great episode about the inactive Mason, going back to the Masonic Roundtable news about me missing that episode. It was a really good episode. The fellas really pulled it together, talked about some statistics and things like that. We had talked for a long time, and something that was kind of a joke between all of us was saying hashtag go to lodge. And Juan Sepulveda was so cool to make a really cool video that we've been pushing everywhere, and it's pretty funny, and I hope you guys enjoy it. If I can, I will add it to the bonus features as a little cool thing in the app. So check that out. We did post it pretty much everywhere, so I'm sure you've seen it already. But if you haven't, it's in the app. This week, we've got two really cool things in addition to our famous Freemason. Last week, I did allude to a kind of historical point by point throughout history of the craft, and that's what we are going to try to accomplish this episode. And this will be, again, from the Transactions of the Illinois Lodge of Research, volume number 24, 2015. So, here we go. All right, and we will start this one off where it begins in page number 15, and I'm reading this right from paper, but I will scan these and add them to the PDFs on the app. British Freemasonry at the Valley of Chicago by Hilton Kaufman, past master. The Scottish Rite Valley of Chicago used the British theme for its spring 2015 reunion. As part of the decoration for the reunion, posters with information about some aspects of British Freemasonry were displayed. This information was gathered rapidly, so meticulous research methods were not always used. The text on each poster had to stand on its own for casual reading by individuals unfamiliar with the subtleties of Masonic history. The text of the posters is presented here as used, except for minor corrections. While the scholarship for the project might not be of the highest standards, it does give a decent general picture of British Freemasonry and how it differs from the practices in the United States. The information was obtained from various websites, including those of bodies involved and the Freemasons Guide and Compendium by Bernard E. Jones. Masonry before the Grand Lodges, about 1100s to 1700s. During the Middle Ages and somewhat beyond, skilled workmen were employed in the construction of large stone buildings, such as cathedrals, churches, and castles. When one project was finished, these workmen were free to leave the area and to seek work elsewhere. There was a system of recognition of local lodges among these workers or operative masons. They had a ritual for initiating and accepting new brothers into the trade. This included reading something known as the Old Charges, which contained legends as to the origin of the trade. Of course, there was also an oath or obligation complete with vicious and bloody penalties. These men were expected to follow the prevailing religion. Depending on the time and the place, this might be Roman Catholicism, Anglicanism, Puritan Protestantism, or Presbyterianism, Once an operative mason was sufficiently skilled, he received signs and words to indicate that he was a qualified worker. These signs and words enabled him to prove himself to be a mason when seeking work elsewhere. While the lodges were independent, some of the more prominent ones, such as Kilwinning Lodge in Ireland, constituted and supervised other lodges. Apparently, some lodges in Great Britain prior to 1717 were self-constituted by groups of masons. There were also masons who were not members of any lodge. There was even a practice in some places of one mason simply making another mason. A number of such independent lodges continued to exist after the modern Grand Lodge of England system was established and were considered legitimate to allow visitation in lodges on modern Grand Lodge rules well into the 18th century. Operative to speculative masonry, 1500s to mid-1700s. There are several theories as to the origins of modern speculative masonry. These include things like secret clubs where royalists could meet, the Commonwealth period of the middle 1600s to an offshoot of society of astrologers. The most commonly accepted theory is that speculative masonry was developed from operative masonry, or that of the construction trade. According to this theory, Scottish operative masons accepted gentlemen and nobility into their lodges. Some of these brethren are thought to have brought masonry to England and thus formed speculative lodges. No formal operative lodges existed in England after the reign of His Glorious Majesty Henry VIII, who ordered them to be disbanded and seized their property. There were, however, men and maybe a few women who did such work. By the end of the period, there were architects and others who supervised the work rather than coming up through the ranks of masons. The London Company of Masons was permitted to operate as a trade association of construction workers, although not as a lodge. Elias Ashmole records in his diary of being made a mason in 1646, probably in a purely speculative lodge. He next records an entry about masonry in 1682. When the list of those he says were present is analyzed, it is found to have a mix of both gentlemen and operative masons. The mixture at the time was such that a prominent stonemason who had been knighted for his work as an architect as well as a skilled stonecutter was later accepted into a lodge with a mix of members. Even when we look at the formation of the first or modern Grand Lodge in 1717, three of the four lodges had many, if not all, members who were actually skilled construction workers. Only one of these lodges was purely speculative. The Modern Grand Lodge of England, 1717 to 1813. In 1717, three largely operative lodges from London and one purely speculative lodge from Westminster formed the modern Grand Lodge of London and elected a Grand Master. This modern Grand Lodge claimed authority over masonry for a 7-mile radius, or roughly the London metropolitan area. The metropolitan area, generally known as London, consists of the City of London, the City of Westminster, and 31 separate boroughs. The City of London was a commercial and financial hub with headquarters for many trades. Westminster is the seat of government with royal palaces and houses of parliament. The 7-mile limit covered the area over which the operative London Company of Masons had authority. There were previously prominent individual or local lodges such as Kilwinning Lodge in Scotland that constituted and supervised other lodges in their areas. Kilwinning Lodge served as a Grand Lodge for at least part of Scotland. The thing that was unique about this modern Grand Lodge is that several existing lodges gave up authority to a new body with authority to make rules and together elect its leaders, rather than one lodge being dominant over the others. Many independent lodges affiliated with this modern Grand Lodge and were issued charters or warrants. New lodges formed and were also issued charters. However, many time immemorial lodges remained independent of this modern Grand Lodge. Eventually, the modern Grand Lodge of London and Westminster called itself the Grand Lodge of England and claimed Masonic authority over all of the country. By 1726, there were lodges throughout England with allegiance to this Grand Lodge. In 1730, Pritchard's Masonry Dissected was published, and this indicated changes made by the modern Grand Lodge as to ritual, as well as revealing the secret method of proving membership. Because of this, the modern Grand Lodge changed the way the recognition tests were done, thus excluding visits from those who were not members of lodges it considered quote-unquote regular. By 1732, the modern Grand Lodge accepted Jews as members. Other differences in practice, such as the banning of processions and limiting lodges to only working the three craft degrees, also occurred. Notable admissions into membership were published for all to see, thus giving the modern Grand Lodge an appearance of being elite. Dissension among the Masons. Early to mid-1700s, there were many Masons besides those who were members of lodges that were part of the modern Grand Lodge of England. There were lodges which had existed for many decades as operatives. They were known as time immemorial lodges. Some lodges had received charters or warrants from older lodges. Still, others had been formed by several Masons according to ancient tradition. On top of this, some Masons independently made other Masons, and there were brethren who were not affiliated with any lodge. The exposé in 1730 showed that the modern Grand Lodge was making changes in ritual and practices as well as exposing the secret means of recognition. Because they had been revealed, the words and signs used to gain admittance were changed, thus excluding the other Masons. Innovations that were made by the modern Grand Lodge greatly upset the others, even when of little real consequence. For example, the form of a lodge would be put on the floor of the taverns where the lodges met with chalk, and then washed off with a mop and water when the meeting was over. The modern Grand Lodge used tape and metal letters instead. The modern Grand Lodge did not permit its lodges to confer the Royal Arch or various side degrees as part of the craft masonry. Many of the other lodges did so. In fact, many thought that one was not fully a Mason until receiving that degree. Apparently, the lodges of the modern Grand Lodge did not read the old charges as part of the ceremony of making a Mason. This had long been part of the tradition. The members of the modern Grand Lodge tended to be more elitist than many of the other Masons. Even though the first Grand Master was from one of the operative lodges, he was described as a gentleman. The following Grand Masters were clearly gentlemen or nobility. It has been claimed that membership of the modern Grand Lodge tended to be Protestant, while many of the outsiders tended to be Roman Catholic. The Ancient Grand Lodge of England, 1751 to 1813. Economic conditions in Ireland in the early 1700s resulting from the Industrial Revolution caused many Irishmen to move to London. Masons among them found that they could not join or form lodges under the modern Grand Lodge of England as the rituals had been changed after the publication of a popular exposé in 1737. To continue meeting as Masons, they formed their own lodges, sometimes with an Irish warrant. Six lodges, not of the rules of any Grand Lodge, met on July 17th. 1751, and established the most ancient and honorable society of free and accepted Masons according to the old institutions, better known as the Ancient Grand Lodge of England. Of the total of 80 men among the membership of these lodges, only two were professional men. The rest were various workmen of low income, although they may have had some education. Grand Masters were eventually recruited from the nobility to lend prestige to the organization. The first, William Stuart, the first Earl of Blessington, previously Grand Master of Ireland, accepted the office of Grand Master on December 27, 1756. Only three men with any other sort of titles served in the higher offices of the ancient Grand Lodge other than the Grand Masters. This tended to be an organization of men of lesser status and wealth. The ancient Grand Lodge strongly insisted that the Royal Arch degree was an essential part of Masonry and that masters of lodges must be properly installed before serving in office. This differed from the modern Grand Lodge of England, which did not permit its lodges to work the Royal Arch degree and did not require that masters of lodges be formally installed. To emphasize that it did not accept the innovations made by the modern Grand Lodge of England, the most ancient and honorable society of free and accepted Masons according to the old institutions referred to itself as the quote-unquote ancients, and the Grand Lodge of England as the quote-unquote moderns. This did not seem to bother its rival, and the terms seemed to stick. The United Grand Lodge of England, 1813 to present. The United Grand Lodge of England was formed by a merger of two rival Grand Lodges, commonly known as the Moderns and the Ancients, on December 27, 1813. Each had a history of somewhat different ritual and practices. By this date, the differences had largely been resolved. The United Grand Lodge of England then became the governing body for most lodges of Freemasons with England and Wales, as well as some outside of the United Kingdom. It can trace its foundations back to the first modern Grand Lodge, which was formed in 1717. The modern Grand Lodge had made some innovations which differed from the practices of many lodges in England, as well as those belonging to the Grand Lodge of Ireland and Scotland. Even some of the lodges that were on the rolls of the quote-unquote moderns did not adopt all of the innovations. Cadwallader Blaney, the ninth Lord Blaney, became the Grand Master of the quote-unquote moderns in 1764 and started seeking reconciliation. As he had been raised in a military lodge, it is most probable that he was actually a member of the ancient Grand Lodge, or had been a member of a lodge under the Grand Lodge of Ireland. There were extremists and modernists in both groups. The moderns had what were known as traditionalists that worked the ancient rituals preferred by its rivals. There was visiting back and forth, with remaking when needed. While the modern Grand Lodge was in control of practices in and near London, its changes and innovations were often ignored in the more distant areas. Relations started improving in the 1790s. In 1799, there was a fear that French spies were hiding among various organizations that imposed oaths of secrecy upon their members. The two Grand Lodges found it necessary to act together to obtain an exemption for Freemasons from the Unlawful Societies Act, which was passed by Parliament because of this fear. A lodge of promulgation was appointed in 1809 to return the moderns' ritual to the older form that would be acceptable to the ancients and the Grand Lodges of Scotland and Ireland. In 1811, the formal return to the old ritual was declared, and the process of union began. Royal princes became the Grand Masters of the two rival lodges. The United Grand Lodge of England came into existence on December 13, 1813, with H.R.H., the Duke of Sussex, as Grand Master. The United Grand Lodge of England now has about 250,000 members in over 8,000 lodges.
British-related Masonic bodies, 1700s to present. Whilst the United Grand Lodge of England only formally recognizes the Royal Arch as a separately administered order or degree that Master Masons can obtain after receiving the third, there are many other orders and degrees available to its members. Many of these bodies and their degree are strictly invitational or have other special requirements. The situation is similar in Ireland and Scotland, but not exactly the same. Some of the bodies in England and Wales are described below. The Holy Royal Arch in England and Wales is practiced as a standalone degree separate from craft masonry. Members meet in a Royal Arch chapter, which are each attached to a craft lodge and also bear the same number. Masons are actively encouraged to seek exaltation into the Holy Royal Arch before considering membership of any further Masonic organization. The Order of Mark Master Masons degree is only conferred in Mark Masons Lodges, which are independent from the United Grand Lodge of England. Within the order, members may also join the Royal Arch Mariners. The Order of the Secret Monitor meets in conclaves, each with a supreme ruler at its head. Within the order, members may also join the Order of the Scarlet Cord. The ancient and accepted rite for England and Wales is the equivalent of the ancient and accepted Scottish rite in the United States and Canada. Under the English Constitution, the rite meets in Rose-Croix chapters and is open only to Master Masons who believe in the Christian Holy Trinity. Candidates are perfected in the 18th degree, with the preceding degrees awarded in name only. Continuing to the 30th degree and beyond is restricted to those who have served in the chair of the chapter. Membership in the Knights Templar is by invitation only. Candidates are required to be Master Masons, Royal Arch Masons, and to believe in the Christian Holy Trinity. Knights members may also join the Knights of Malta and or the Knights Templar Priests. The Order of the Red Cross of Constantine, the Holy Sepulchre of the Saints John the Evangelist, is colloquially known as the Red Cross of Constantine. Candidates are required to be Master Masons, Royal Arch Masons, and believed to be in the Christian Holy Trinity. Members meet as a conclave. The order works 3 degrees and also administrates 2 distinct appendant orders, which are both Christian in character. The Allied Masonic Degrees, a group of 5 formally independent degrees, are conferred by invitation only. Candidates are required to be Master Masons, Royal Arch Masons, and Mark Masons. Members may also be invited to join the Order of Knight Masons. The London Company of Masons, 1356 to present. An organization of stonemasons known as London Company of Masons existed prior to the creation of the Grand Lodge of Freemasons. This organization still exists with a slight change of name and denies any connection to the fraternity. The company has records indicating that it regulated the craft of stonemasonry in the London area since 1356. In 1677, the company was formally incorporated by royal charter under the seal of King Charles II, giving it power to control the work of stonemasons in the cities of London and Westminster, and 7 miles therefrom. With the Protestant Reformation, much of the construction work of churches and similar stone structures decreased. After the Great Fire of London in 1666, many workers came in from the provinces of England, as well as Scotland and Ireland. Because of the need to rapidly rebuild London, these caused the company to lose control of the craft. Some of the construction work was being done by members of other crafts, such as plasterers. Members of the company often served as general contractors rather than working stonemasons. When St. Paul's Cathedral was rebuilt after the fire, members of the London Company of Masons laid the first and last stone. Even though the company was involved, the vast majority of the work was done by non-members. The stonemasons that came from outside of London largely did not join the London Company of Masons. They tended to form lodges, as was the custom elsewhere. These lodges may well have had construction workers from other crafts. The Grand Lodge of Ireland, 1725 to present. The Grand Lodge of Ireland came into existence some prior to June 24, 1725. The first record of it is in a newspaper report of the installation of a new Grand Master, the first Earl of Rosay. While it probably is a bit older, the Grand Lodge of Ireland celebrates 1725 as its anniversary. There are strong indications that there were lodges in Ireland prior to the 18th century. Many new lodges were founded throughout Ireland during the 18th century. These met in taverns, inns, and coffee houses. Some of the specific locations in Dublin and Belfast are known today. The Grand Lodge of Ireland, however, held its meetings in a more formal and sedate civic and guild buildings until it obtained its own quarters in the 1820s. The number of lodges increased dramatically by the end of the century, with the popularity of the volunteer movement, which involved local forces replacing regular British forces that withdrew to fight in the American colonies. There was often an association between specific lodges and volunteer regiments. There was some political influence by the volunteers toward democracy in Ireland. Several lodges, especially in the Anglican North, were vocal about this. Most who proclaimed that the Constitution should be changed to have independence from Britain disavowed violence. Some did advocate violence if necessary. Other lodges disassociated themselves from those that were advocating revolution. The Grand Lodge of Ireland reminded lodges of the Grand Lodge law forbidding religious or political quarrels to be brought within the lodge after it had received some pressure from the government. Even though previous papal bulls were pretty much ignored in Ireland, the 1826 bull of Leo XII against secret societies was widely published there. This caused even very prominent Irishmen such as Daniel O'Connell to resign under pressure from the church. The Grand Lodge of Scotland, 1736 to present. The Grand Lodge of Scotland was founded in 1736 with the full title of the Grand Lodge of Ancient, Free, and Accepted Masons of Scotland. This Grand Lodge of Scotland is able to show a distinct connection between operative masonry and speculative Freemasonry of today. The Grand Lodge of Scotland has records going back to 1599 with the minutes of a meeting of Mary's Chapel Lodge No. 1 in Edinburgh. Mother Kilwinning Lodge is probably older, but its oldest records were destroyed in a fire. Scottish lodges have a considerable amount of autonomy and control of their own affairs. Many of the lodges existed before the establishment of the Grand Lodge of Scotland and insisted on the use of their own rituals and procedures, and even regalia. Because this independence was established for the older lodges, it could not be denied to lodges that were warranted after the establishment of the Grand Lodge of Scotland. Even though the rituals are distinctive for each lodge, they all contain the principal points of each degree. There is plenty of room for elaboration, and there are many additions unique to each lodge. The regalia that is worn can be quite colorful, since each lodge can choose its own colors. Because Mother Kilwinning Lodge was unable to prove its ancient existence, it was offered the Lodge No. 2, rather than to be recognized as the eldest. It considered this an insult, and seceded from the Grand Lodge of Scotland. It had been chartering other lodges from well into the 1400s and resumed doing so, acting as a rival Grand Lodge in Scotland. It even issued a warrant to one in the colony of Virginia in the United States. In 1807, it rejoined the Grand Lodge of Ancient, Free, and Accepted Masons of Scotland, being issued the number 0, and brought the lodges that it had chartered with it. Alright, that's it for that piece, and I really hope you kind of enjoyed that brief history. It is a little bit lengthy of a paper, but I thought to split it up would be kind of a disservice, since it kind of went in chronological order with the one exception going back to the 1300s or 1400s. Next week, I would like to read a little bit about French Masonry. and I've got a good paper that also comes out of the Illinois Lodge of Research on that as well. Now, I do realize that French Masons would probably be a better resource coming into an episode, and perhaps at a later date we can have a guest on to talk about that, or it might even be something we do on the Masonic Roundtable. But this is a paper written by Americans to kind of understand the French system of Masonry, and so we will go into that next week, and Brother Stephen L. Harrison should be back with another piece. I did want to also mention that our thoughts and prayers are always out there for our distressed brothers, and I know a lot of you really enjoy Fratero, and he was in a bit of a bind, and he was in a little bit of a car accident, and he got a little bit messed up. He is doing okay. He is not paralyzed or, you know, on death's door or anything like that. He's just in a lot of pain, and he's kind of been bedridden for a while. So I'd ask that all of you, if you have his email address, fratero.lux@gmail.com, send him an email. Let him know how things are going. Give him some love, because he loved all you guys, and he really does appreciate everything when you guys were emailing and going back and forth with the awesome esoteric discussions we were having. And with that, let's go right into this week's famous Freemason. So this week's famous Freemason is Anson Jones, born January 20th, 1798, passed away January 9th, 1858. He was a doctor, businessman, congressman, and the fourth and last president of the Republic of Texas, sometimes called the Architect of Annexation. Jones was born on January 20th, 1798, in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. There is no information between his birth and 1820. In 1820, Jones was licensed as a doctor by the Oneida New York Medical Society and began medical practice in 1822. However, his practice did not prosper, and he moved several more times before finally being arrested in Philadelphia by a creditor. He stayed in Philadelphia for a few more years teaching and practicing medicine until 1824, when he decided to go to Venezuela. Later, Jones returned to Philadelphia, earned a medical degree, and reopened his practice. He never had much success as a doctor. In 1832, he renounced medicine and headed for New Orleans, where he entered the mercantile trade. Once again, though, Jones' dreams were thwarted. Though he safely weathered two plagues, his business efforts never met with any success, and within a year, he had no money. He was a member and past master of Masonic Harmony Lodge No. 52 of Philadelphia. He was a past grand of Independent Order of Odd Fellows, Washington Lodge No. 2 and Philadelphia Lodge No. 13 in Pennsylvania, and a past grand master of the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania. In 1833, Jones headed west to Texas, settling eventually in Brazoria. Here, at last, he met with success, establishing a medical practice that prospered quickly. In 1835, he began to speak out about the growing tensions between Texas and Mexico, and that year attended the consultation, a meeting held at Columbia by Texas patriots to discuss the fight with Mexico. The meeting's leadership did not want to call the meeting a convention for fear that the Mexican government would view it as an independence forum. Jones himself presented a resolution at the consultation calling for a convention to be held to declare independence, but he himself refused to be nominated to the convention. During the Texas Revolution, Jones served as a judge advocate and surgeon to the Texas Army, though he insisted on holding the rank of private throughout a conflict. After the war, Jones returned to Brazonia and resumed his medical practice. Jones expected to return to his practice at Brazonia after the term in Congress, but upon his return to Brazonia, Jones found that James Collinsworth, a fellow Texas patriot and signer of the Texas Declaration of Independence from Brazonia, had set up a law practice in Jones's office. Jones evicted Collinsworth and challenged him to a duel, though the duel never occurred. On March 1, 1835, Jones met with four other Masons at Brazonia and petitioned the Grand Master of Louisiana for dispensation and a charter to form the first Masonic Lodge in Texas. In December, when the lodge was set to labor, Jones was elected the first master. The charter for Holland Lodge No. 36 arrived in April of 1836, and Jones carried it in his saddlebags during the Battle of San Jacinto. At the formation of the Grand Lodge of the Republic of Texas in December of 1837, he was elected its first Grand Master. He also became the first Grand Master of the Independent Order of Odd Fellows in Texas. On May 17, 1840, he married Mary Smith Jones. Together, they had four children. He went on to go into a career of politics and later became the fourth and last president of Texas from 1844 until the Republic was abolished in 1846. Jones later hoped that the new Texas state legislature would send him to the United States Senate. He was not chosen. And as time went on, he became increasingly bitter about the slight. Although Jones prospered as a planter and eventually amassed an enormous estate, he was never able to get past the fact that Sam Houston and Thomas Jefferson Rusk were chosen over him to represent Texas in Washington, D.C. After the suicide of Thomas Jefferson Rusk in 1857, Jones became convinced that the legislature would finally send him to the Senate, but he received no votes. For 4 days, he had lodged at Houston's old Capitol Hotel, the former seat of government of the Republic of Texas, when he fatally shot himself in his room after dinner on January 9, 1858. He was 59 years old. Jones was buried at the Glenwood Cemetery in Houston. Jones County and its county seat, Anson, were both named for Anson Jones. Anson Jones Elementary School in Bryan, Texas, is named for him, along with Anson Jones Middle School in San Antonio, Texas. His plantation home, known as Barrington, is preserved at Washington on the Brazos State Historic Park. Well, that's the end of that famous Freemason segment. Just a tragic story of kind of a pretty accomplished Mason. Very interesting nonetheless. I did want to also, I had a really interesting blurb that fellow Wayne Greenlee had sent me over the last week, and I thought this was pretty darn cool. It's called the Royal Antediluvian Order of Buffaloes. And I just wanted to read a little bit about this society. It seemed pretty interesting to me. So the Royal Antediluvian Order of Buffaloes, or the RAOB, is one of the largest fraternal organizations in the United Kingdom. So it's still there. The order started in 1822 and is known as the Buffs to members. The RAOB organization aids members, their families, dependents of former members, and other charitable organizations. The order's motto? Quote, "No man is at all times wise," end quote, and has the maxim of justice, truth, and philanthropy. Kind of sounds familiar. The history. So, origin in London. The order has a rule book, manual of instruction, and a ceremony lectures issued and revised by the Grand Lodge of England based at Harrogate in England. The lodge description for branch organization and headquarters was adopted in imitation of Freemasonry, but RAOB is completely open in its objectives, activities, and ritual. So as the order spreads throughout the United Kingdom, when a lodge opened in a new area, it became the mother lodge from which subsequent minor lodges would be opened. It does have a grand lodge, and in April of 1866, it was the Grand Lodge, later known as the Grand Lodge of England, was formed to control the order, to set laws, to establish procedures, and manage administration. It's had some name changes. The order's honorifics of royal, when it did not have royal patronage nor a royal charter, and antediluvian, when in fact its foundations are of historical record, or that it is an order, although it had no standing nor recognition from any house of nobility. During the 20th century, the First World War led to a temporary or even permanent closure of many of the lodges due to the enlistment of members. The Buffs supported the war effort through supplying ambulances to bring wounded soldiers back from the front lines. Initially, 6 motorized ambulances were purchased and sent with each one manned by a volunteer Buff, who followed, and on their return after World War, the ambulance formed the first ambulance service in England. Pretty cool. Today, the Royal Antediluvian Order of Buffaloes continues to work in the local community, helping those its members promise to help and assist in times of difficulty or need. Minor lodges throughout the United Kingdom and the rest of the world raise money for charities and charitable causes. As with many organizations dating from the pre-Victorian period, there has been a noticeable decline in membership since the boom of the 1970s. By 2012, Scotland's oldest lodge, the Royal Edinburgh Lodge 854, was down to just 25 members. Membership is open to all males over the age of 18 who are willing to declare that they are true and loyal supporters of the British Crown and Constitution. Discussion of politics or religion is strictly forbidden at gatherings, as is gambling. The order currently has 3-tiered system of minor or private lodges, provincial grand lodges, local governing bodies, and grand lodges. Each province may also have a knight's chapter and a roll of honor, or ROH. Office and degrees. There are 4 degrees within the RAOB. They have brother, which is first degree, and they refer to it as kangaroo. There is number 2 is certified primo, or second degree. Third is knight order of merit. Knight sir is the 3rd degree. And the 4th is roll of honor, or right honorable sir. That's the 4th degree. In a minor lodge, there are 11 offices, and those are worthy primo, city marshal, city secretary, city treasurer, city chamberlain, city tiler, city constable, city registrar, city minstrel, city waiter, and alderman of benevolence. So there you have it. Pretty darn cool.
I thought it was really neat. Thanks to Brother Greenlee. I called him fellow earlier because he's a fellow craft at the moment, but soon to be Master Mason. We're really excited about that. But many thanks to Brother Greenlee for sending me the little bit about this. And you can read all about it on Wikipedia, actually. They have a whole entry for it, which is where I pulled most of my information here and actually is the exact link that Brother Greenlee sent me. So outside of all that, I guess I just wanted to say it has been awesome to do this show, and it's been really stressful to do this show during this year, my year in the East, and it's just about up. I only have one more meeting to go, which is my stated / annual meeting, and after that I've got a fellow craft degree to confer, and then I'm done, and then the next guy comes in, and it should be a very great year coming up. They're going to continue many of the previous successes from previous years, continuing on into the future, and we really need to push that idea. So if you're a master and you're coming to the end of your year, or you're a master, you're an old master, whatever, I think it's a really big idea. We're always talking about keeping masonry in my year. In my year, we did this. In my year, we did that. And I think that's a little bit of a small thinking. I think what we need to do, brothers, is to look at it and say, together, so yes, it was this lodge year. It wasn't your year. It was the lodge's year. And you need to look at it as a whole, because you have to have a plan, and that plan has to go from now into the future. So it's not in my year, it's a lodge plan. And you should look at it that way. You should take the successes and continue them. And you should continue to move forward and be progressive. Progressive, yes, that means change. Go ahead and change. Make some changes. It's okay. You know, in some of the really old charges of the lodge, back in the 16 and 1700s, there are references to a Mason should be this, this, and this, or whatever they decide to change it to. So they're open to change. We've always been about change. We've always been about progression. So I would urge you to make those progressive moves and keep your lodge strong. With that, I would ask you to please don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 articles every week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Great content all the time. And don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable, going live every Tuesday night at 10, 9 Central. There are several podcasts out there, and there are several blogs out there. There's even a new satirical Masonic blog. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's out there. I would like to say that I really appreciate you listening to this program, and I appreciate when you guys buy pins and when you guys buy tie bars and stuff. It really helps keep this thing going, and without it, it would be very difficult to keep up with the bills that we incur with the show. You know, it's not terribly expensive, but to have that constant stream of a little bit of donation here and there to make sure that all episodes are always available for everybody, that's really tremendous and a great gift that all of you have given everybody else. And with that, I would just like to say thank you so much for everybody who has been ordering pins and all that, and doing some shopping on support the show section of our website, www.wcypodcast.com. And I want to say thanks for sticking with me through this rough year. It has been absolutely bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. So thank you. We'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level. For whence came you? I'm Robert Johnson.